Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Jerry Sander, your host of Showing Up. I'm a therapist in the Hudson Valley of New York and the Black Dirt region of the Hudson Valley of New York, to be specific. It is late September. The raspberries are gone. We're waiting to see whether we'll have any kind of Halloween or not, and I don't know. I do know we've got a really interesting interview here with a Brooklyn writer, a Brooklyn children's book writer, who caught my attention with the title of her book called Divorce is the Worst. Divorce is the Worst. And it speaks to kids about things in a way that traditionally isn't done. So I just really wanted to speak with her, and I was able to. So Anastasia Higginbotham is her name, and she'll even tell us about her name. So sit tight, and I hope you enjoy this. I am so thrilled to be speaking with Anastasia Higginbotham this morning. I'll tell you why. Here's her biography. Anastasia Higginbotham launched her Ordinary Terrible Things children's book series. Ordinary Terrible Things. That's brilliant. In 2015 with, get ready, Divorce is the Worst. She followed it with Death is Stupid and Tell Me About Sex, Grandma. That's right. Tell Me About Sex, Grandma. Her most recent book, Not My Idea, a book about whiteness, tackles white supremacy and was published in 2018 by Dodier Press. Higginbotham makes her books in collage on grocery bag paper using recycled materials, including jewelry and fabric. And her books, workshops, and author talks demonstrate a way to cope with change and loss using raw materials available to us and drawing on the wisdom of our own lived experiences. A direct challenge to the status quo, Higginbotham's work undermines systems of domination such as white supremacy and patriarchy by empowering children to recognize when they are being lied to and to demand to know the truth. Welcome, Anastasia.
Thank you, Jerry.
Just before I turned the mic on, you told me the story about the name because I thought it was such an incredible author name to adopt. Could you explain?
It was so sweet when you asked me, is that your real, could that possibly be your real name? And yes, my mother's cousin, who was a real troublemaker in her life, in my mother's life in the best way. So she would often leave after visits, and my mom would be a little bit more likely to say to everybody around, you know, go ahead, pick it up yourself, do it yourself. Like, my mom was more self-protective when Aunt Gloria had been to visit. And she suggested my name when my mother was pregnant with me. She said, I got the name for your next daughter, Anastasia Nicole Higginbotham. With a name like that, she won't be just any old whore, she'll be the madam. And so I've been trying to live up to that ever since. Delighted to live up to it.
Madam Higginbotham. The first thing I want to say, you know, almost as a PS to your own description of yourself, is you are a truth teller and you believe that children will benefit from hearing the truth, even with very difficult subjects that we typically try and shield kids from hard truths about. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, and the impulse to shield them makes sense, right? We don't want to have our children just assaulted with harsh realities. And yet when the reality does have some harshness to it, if we go ahead and sugarcoat it or put a spin on it to make it more cheery or pleasant than it is, it's a little like gaslighting them. But you can go your whole childhood being gaslighted.
Exactly. Why would adults do that?
I think because we don't know what to do in the presence of someone else's pain. We're not prepared for that, and especially when it's your child. And maybe we never had the experience of anybody bearing witness to our pain, whether as children or as adults. And in this context, we think that we need to toughen them up by just like getting them through it, getting them over it. And, you know, there's lots of great things about getting toughened up, but I think the toughest people are the ones who experienced the pain of whatever they were going through, whatever crisis or upheaval, whether it's a divorce or a death or some kind of change that that demands a lot of them. You know, the toughest people are also often the tenderest people, the people who really felt that blow, felt that severing or plates shifting underneath of them, you know, and made sense of it and made meaning of it. And I think the people who have the hardest time as adults, including myself, are those who tried to not feel that because it wasn't convenient for the people around me.
Yeah. I'm looking at this quote from Terry Real. A child needs explicit permission from the adult to have their own feelings. Mm. Taking care of the parent implicitly or explicitly by not sharing feelings and not burdening the parent is a really bad idea for the child. Mm. The parent needs to step in and make it clear the child's feelings are not a burden. Mm. Mm. When you talk about bearing witness to a child's feelings, you're talking about encouraging and allowing all the rough stuff to come to the surface, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if that causes sadness for the parent.
And yes, and trusting ourselves a little bit more to be able to not do anything about it other than make some space around the child so that it all can come out. So the child doesn't think, if I feel this big feeling, if I acknowledge it, everything's going to change and people are going to feel differently about me. It can just actually be a feeling that's passing through or an aspect of what you're experiencing as a child. It doesn't define you now. It doesn't, it can rock the boat, but it doesn't threaten everything, mm-hmm. you know?
You're talking about the development of real resilience mm-hmm. after you've gone through mm-hmm. some great sadness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some great understanding, too. Like, maybe you really understand yourself better, and maybe that's all you understand. Maybe you really don't understand why your parents divorced or what a divorce even is. What does that even mean, that my parents can choose to separate from each other? If that's all I have ever known, you know, it's different if you've come into a family where it was just you and one parent, you know, that's going to be different. But if you come into this unit that is very self-identified as a unit, and then that unit is cracked open and the pieces are moved around, you know, even if you don't understand that, maybe just understand your experience of that. I think there's a lot of value there.
Yeah, in a sense, what you're asking a child to understand is that love can die or get so changed that it needs to go away, which is the opposite of what we've been telling them all along. I love you. I love your mommy. Mm-hmm. We love each other. Mm-hmm. And then you're asking them to process, this family's breaking apart because we don't love each other enough to work it out or stay together or figure it out together. So, but I still love you.
Mm, God, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, and that idea of love being something that can change to the point of running out, like water through a leaky jug, you know, that is pretty profound. And I never mentioned love in Divorce is the Worst because I didn't really want to get into that.
Breaking news. Breaking news. That is the sound, of course, of breaking news on Showing Up. I have just been handed this just in from KXAN in Austin, Texas. Thank you, boys. Have a safe ride home. Hog Wild, U.S. and Texas have out of control population of super pigs, expert says. Notice the wording. The United States and Texas have super pigs. This apparently has come about when wild boars mated with domestic pigs. They're now running around in the millions and causing $2.5 billion in damage every year. And the mating has resulted in what's called super pigs, who are highly intelligent, very good senses of smell, thicker fur. They live better in the wild, and they have litters of up to 10 piglets in each litter. These things can be 3 feet tall. They generally weigh between 75 and 250 pounds, though hunters have snagged some that have been about 480 pounds. And they're coming our way. They can run up to 30 miles an hour. If you are a science fiction screenplay writer, pay close attention. They have all kinds of pathogens and diseases that can be transmitted to pets and humans, and they have been known to physically attack farmers, hikers, and picnickers. Perhaps most alarmingly, the Great Hills Country Club in Austin reported that increased hog activity on its golf course resulted in large and small chunks of grass being uprooted in various course locations. So, definitely, there's something new to worry about. Now let's get back to our interview with Anastasia. You put this very beautifully. You wrote an article called "Want to Make Sure Your Kids Get Over the Divorce? First, Let Them Go Through It." And here's what you said. This is a couple of years ago. Here's my view, born of experience and supported by child therapists and divorce mediators. Until we stop telling kids the divorce is for the best, as if that's a comfort, they may continue to experience it as the worst long after the initial announcement that rocked their world. You can't get over something you never went through in the first place. That's pretty brilliant.
How's that land for you? How does that speak to you?
I think it encourages us to let kids have their hurt instead of suddenly giving them a lollipop and telling them everything's going to be fine. It's all for the better. You'll see, things will be wonderful, right?
Yeah, the only thing that you can know for sure with a divorce, well, and with life in general, but with a divorce specifically, is this will keep changing. Mm-hmm. And if you were very reliant on and identified with things being as they are and not changing, that's going to be hard for a while. Or that's going to, it may not be hard. It depends on how you relate to change as a child, but that's going to be happening for a while. It will be happening.
And I'm guessing you do this in your other books too, which I haven't read, but that you're preparing children for a life of change and some turmoil. And that is okay because that's real. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what you need. That's what you need to be able to do.
Not just believe things are set, things are wonderful, things are perfect, they're never going to change.
Yeah. Yeah, that like takes my breath away to think that we would ever tell someone things aren't going to change. That is just like, don't say that. That's the only thing we know for sure.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of when a parent has a kid whose small pet has died during the day while the kid is away at school, and they run out to a pet store to get another pet that looks just like it to put it in the cage, rather than use that as an opportunity to talk about death.
Right.
Right.
Right. Let's talk about that. What is that impulse to disguise and deny?
Yeah.
Loss?
Yeah. And perhaps it's just really selfish. Like, I can't stand this pain that I'm causing my children.
Yes.
So to the extent you feel comfortable, what made you take on this topic of divorce? How did you get involved in that?
Because it was when I came to New York City after college to be a writer and live with my brother, and I wanted to be a writer. I knew I could draw. I thought maybe I'd be a cartoonist or maybe I'd be like an activist like Gloria Steinem. But I had these aspirations. But what happened was every time I sat down to write anything, I kept writing about my parents' divorce. And it was like the whole world was open to me. And I kept writing about this like 10 square feet of experience in my life. Like I was like a zoo animal, just going in a circle, going in a circle, going in a circle, because they're stuck there. And so I noticed after many years that I kept writing about my parents' divorce, my various things in my childhood, including my grandparents', just ordinary, terrible experience of grandparents whose health gets worse and worse, and they have to be in a nursing home, and then there's the period of visiting them in the nursing home, and then they die. And how does that all get handled? But really, the divorce and death were the ones that kept, I just kept circling around this painful territory. And it wasn't really until my 30s that I realized that, well, then this is it. This is your contribution, Anastasia, because if you don't walk through this material, then you can't do whatever it is, whatever else it is you think you want to do. So why don't you just go ahead and do what's right in front of you and keeps calling your attention. And go ahead and address the child that you were and, you know, acknowledge that there is a book or there is a voice that you would like to hear in your head that walks you through those experiences. Be that voice, be that guide, and bear witness to your own self. And so I started making the books that I wish that I would have had. And I wrote Divorce is the Worst, and then I wrote Death is Stupid, and then took many, many years to figure out how I was going to illustrate them, and ultimately came to this process of grocery bag paper and just collage materials and basically little paper dolls who I put clothes on. It's the same way I used to make books when I was 10 years old.
That's fantastic. It has got to be so cool being a kid, seeing a book like this, knowing it was made by an adult, but an adult who's in touch with her own 10-year-old self, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't get away.
So I'm leading up to the question about criticisms of your book and some of the feedback you've gotten, but I wanted to insert this. A long time ago, I saw a psychologist, Dr. Judy Wallerstein, speak, and Judy Wallerstein wrote a book about the effects of divorce on children. It came out in the 80s when the divorce laws had just really liberalized a lot, enabling women as a feminist thing to have it be easier to get out of a bad marriage and get divorced. And her book said, okay, may we look at the effect of it on children? And that immediately kind of put a damper on the party. And there actually were parties like the people in New York. There were articles appearing that people were having divorce parties, and there was a line of divorce greeting cards to send. Just heard about your divorce. It was all happy, happy, happy. It's a strike against patriarchy. Let's get out from under the man's thumb. Everything's going well. But Judy Wallerstein looked at the effect on the children. And she said in her studies that they did fairly well and were and actually more resourceful than children of non-divorces in many dimensions. Mm. But but damage was there in terms of their ability to form and sustain intimate relationships going forward. Mm. And this was not received well. Mm. It was received as a kind of an anti-feminist statement from a woman. And she was dogged by criticism that, are you trying to tell people to stay in bad marriages just for the sake of the kids? She went on to look back at the same people she studied 5, 10, 15, 25 years later to see how they were doing. And she felt that her work stood up. Mm. And so but she got a lot of flack for saying, let's stop the party for a second to look at the effect on the kids. She said, I have no doubt that divorce is fine for adults to do as something to move their lives forward. And there is a hurt done to kids. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, what kind of reaction did you get to your book when you published it?
So some of the critical response was that it's the title sets it up so that kids, I'm going to make kids feel bad about a divorce when maybe everything's fine and maybe it is for the best, you know, just a lot of that same language where, don't tell my kids how to feel about a divorce. And of course, I'm not telling them how to feel about the divorce. I made the title funny and kids get the joke. So when I say what the title is in a room full of children, they laugh and they say, you know, you can say that again. And they're not saying, I have terrible parents. They divorced and now they've ruined me forever. They're saying things, they're speaking to the experience of having to go back and forth between the two houses and you forget your stuff at the one house that you needed at the other house. The kind of the inconvenience of that, just the kind of the bounciness of back and forth. When they really share about their experience, it's more about like the day to day and the confusion of the constant change and, you know, maybe a new baby that comes into your life who's, you're one of your parents.
Remarried.
Yeah. Remarried or had a child with someone. And then you're just like, my family's really, expanding and changing. And, I got to learn to deal with all these people. I got to relate to many more people. Who are they and how am I supposed to feel about them? Just because this person is called my stepbrother, I just met them. What am I supposed to do about that?
You wrote in your article about, you know, the awkwardness of visiting dad for dinner on Wednesdays, an event you and I guess your brother dubbed Broken Home Night. From which I always returned hungry, not for food, just more of him. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I just missed him. I felt bad that I was young and I felt sorry for him that he had to live alone because I had this idea that the only way to feel loved was to have a lot of people around you. I'm one of five children. So that idea of living alone to me now sounds amazing. But at the time, I thought he was going to be really lonely for us. And my mother had those parties.
Oh, the congratulations parties?
Oh, hell yeah. She had parties. She called them. Her sisters would come over. I'm going to cuss for real quick. But her sisters would come over and they called them bitch parties. And it was when, you know, the women would get together and they would just bitch. And there was so much
about the men in their lives.
Yes. But they also told that yes. And my mom, especially, she had a lot of pent up stuff that she needed to get out. And that mm-hmm. I get that. And yet being privy to it was not ideal for me.
Yeah. Why did you need to hear this? I mean, and what is that? How are you supposed to feel about your dad then?
Yeah, I was pretty screwed up about it. Yeah, because I'm very empathic, and it was hard to me to know that he had rejected her, and it was painful to me to know that she was so thoroughly rejecting him. And yet, I did see her grow in ways that I'd never seen her take up so much space. I had never seen her laugh that hard as she did at those bitch parties. I mean, those were therapeutic. Those were really important to her. So that, you know, what you describe about the woman who wrote about, hey, hold on a minute. Let's look at how this is affecting the kid. So the only thing that happened there was the wrong conclusion was drawn. The conclusion is not don't get divorced. You need your divorces. Adults need to have agency over their own lives and acknowledge when living together is not creating an environment where people can really be.
Because it's so interesting speaking with you, I don't want to give short shrift to your other books. So I'm hoping you're going to do another podcast with me because I really want to hear about your book about whiteness. And I also don't want to skip Death is Stupid. What a great title. Death is stupid. Obviously, death is stupid. Who invented it? Anastasia, who invented death, huh?
Let's get them.
Yeah. So how did you handle that in your book?
Same. So death, it's all the same. It's like, can we stand to look at it exactly as it is?
Which is, I'm not letting you off the hook easily. What is, does that mean I'm going to see grandma again in heaven soon, or does it mean something else in your book?
Yes, it definitely doesn't offer that you're going to see grandma in heaven again. It stays right in this moment of trying to understand, the child is trying to even absorb the reality of the fact that she is no longer here. I can't sit with her. She can't sit with me. I can't touch her hand. She's not going to smile at me, except in my memory. She's gone. Like, why does that even happen? Who else is going to die? And then in the book, because the whole story takes place just in one day of the funeral, the grandma's funeral, the child witnesses their father sobbing, very shaken, this big man just shaking and sobbing over the death of his mother. And the child is so shaken by that because I need that guy. If he falls apart, what's going to happen? So I kept it in that realm of, you know, there's all the questions about the death and the dead person, but what about the living? Are they going to be okay after this death? And so the book is really about that.
Wow. And what kind of reaction have you gotten to that book?
You know what? People love that book. Nobody's mad about that book. And it allows.
I guess they're less defensive, you know, about death. That you know, that's so amazing. I remember reading one clinician said that people adapt easier to the loss of death in their life than divorce.
Wow.
That children will have an easier time of it with death than divorce. I don't know, but I mean, what you're saying is no one's angry at you for this book. Right?
Right. Well, yeah.
So where's the hate mail coming from? We were laughing before we started recording about no author ever gets, you never get emails saying, I read your book and I'm indifferent, you know? So clearly you're shaking people up. And when you're determined to speak the truth in children's books, you get some angry parents saying what to you?
I'm racist because I talk about whiteness, because I draw attention to the racial designation of whiteness as a way to understand racism and white supremacy better and understand and convey to children that as white children, you can sign off from the systems and the forces that are at work in the world that tell you you're superior, tell you you're innocent, tell you you're good and you deserve a benefit of the doubt. Those are forces at work that have you complicit in oppression. And if you don't want to be part of that, you don't have to be part of that. You can, you, we're all caught up in it because you can't live in this country. I've only ever lived in the United States, so I only know it here. But we're all caught up in it, but that doesn't mean you have to perpetuate it. You can make choices once you understand it better, how it moves, where it gets expressed, how it might be inside of you, kind of the way pollution gets inside of you. And but you can love yourself and be in solidarity with Black and brown people and people who are experiencing being targeted by an anti-Black culture, an anti-Black society. You can align with Black liberation, and that will bring you to your own liberation.
You are knocking it out of the ballpark with these with these topics. You know, you're going right towards the things that everyone likes to just say, things are fine. Is there really a need to talk about this stuff out loud, particularly with children? You know?
Yeah. And
So, you know, it's almost like the same thing that they would say in each situation. Things are fine. We're fine. Don't rile them up. Don't introduce the idea of racism towards them.
Right. Don't say it. Don't say those words. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't introduce the idea of sex to children.
As if they're not having an experience of sex inside of their bodies.
Right. So the only one that you get off the hook with is death. Well, okay. Yeah. Death's pretty non-negotiable, but everything else is fine.
But even death, we tell them, like, it's not really death. It's life everlasting. It's just like, oh, man, cut
right,
it out.
Right.
Just cut it out. I can't. She's not here. Just admit it.
This has been a delight. I would encourage any parent who's going through a divorce, no matter how good they think it is, to get that book, Divorce is the Worst for Your Kids, and just let them have their feelings and share their feelings with you. You can all handle it, and you'll come out more resilient, the kind of resilient, smart kids that you're talking about.
And even if even if a kid's own parents are not going through divorce, I mean, you can be a better friend to your friend whose parents may be going through a divorce if you understand it a little bit better, just as a human thing. I really appreciate this, and I'm glad that you want to talk again.
I do want to hear more from Anastasia Higginbotham, and I hope we will talk again soon. So thanks for being with us today. And look forward to our special election edition coming up soon with added sound effects. I'll be checking in with people across the country who also don't know about what's going to happen. And we'll watch events unfurl live. Well, it won't be live. You'll hear it afterwards. But we're not going to know the results of who the next president is on election night. We can do that all together and then listen to it and untangle the whole muddle. So stay tuned for election coverage coming soon. And a public service reminder, if you see a feral hog running towards you at 30 miles an hour, it could be a super pig. Do not pet it, and definitely do not adopt it. Till next time, I'm Jerry Sander. We'll be right back.